This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
So I want to start by using a different translation of the chant that we've been doing in the morning. Because I think the way that we use language is interesting. And this chant comes from a different language that's kind of characters. This is the right one. So I'll pass out the translation. I'll read it while the copy is going around. And this is a translation that's not done by an actual scholar. It's a little bit more modern. Thus, by Buddhas and ancestors, the Dharma is secretly transmitted. Now that you have it, guard it well. Snow upon a silver plate, a white egret hiding in the moonlight. Similarity is not identity. Similars, when together, can be distinguished. You'll not see it in what people say. You'll see it in their spontaneous responses and reactions. Acting and achieving in the old familiar way, you miss the slip. Look again, wait, look to the larger context. Too far away and too close are both wrong, as in relation to a great fire. Fancy words that are merely rupa are themselves klesha. True radiance comes in darkest night. The dawn brings no dew. This rule benefits beings. Use it to uproot all kinds of dukkha. Although uncontrived, it is not wordless. Thus facing the jewel mirror, rupa images regard one another. You are not it, but it is definitely you. Like a baby complete in five ways, neither going nor coming, neither arising nor staying. Mama, mama, wawa, speech without speech. In the final analysis, the object is not attained because the speech is not yet right. In the double li hexagram, the one who stands upright and the one who bows depend upon one another. You make the threefold division, but to get the result, you work it into five. Like the chi grass taste, like the vajra, in their encounter, disciple and master embrace and display the central mystery. To know the ancient way is to know the way ahead. Take it to heart and you will take and will take you along. If reverent then happy, nothing can go wrong. The truth that heaven bestows is nonetheless mysterious, not even to be classed with delusion and enlightenment. In all due season, with the ripening and causes and conditions, its glory quietly emerges. Fine, it penetrates hell. Great, no cell can hold it. A tiny mistake and you lose the tune. Now we have sudden and gradual and sectarian meanings to take their stands. The sects separate, setting up rules and standards. Yet if one plumb them to the very depths, it will be found that true nature flows quite naturally. Outwardly calm, yet agitated within, one is like a tethered colt or a trapped mouse. From pity, as Dana Paramita, the former sages perform the Dharma. By such paradoxical means as black silk performing pure whiteness. When muddled thought is extinguished, the willing heart comes into its own. To walk hand in hand with those of old, one must inquire of the ancient ways. Along the Buddha way, 10 kalpas contemplating the Bodhi tree, thus the tiger's tattered ears, thus the horse's old gray leg. Therefore, for the downcast, a jeweled footrest, a noble chariot. Therefore, astonishingly, there are dutiful cats and pure cattle. Emperor Yi could hit a target at 100 yards by dint of skill and strength. But how will you make it meet 2 arrows in mid-air straight on? How make the wooden man sing, the stone damsel dance? This cannot arrive by vijnana cravings, much less include discriminative thought. The minister serves the kind. The child respects the father. Without service, there is no loyalty. Without respect, no support. Make use of this secret practice. Be the foolish being completely. Only in each making the other successful can the master with the master be inherited. So it's quite a lot different than the translation that we've been reading in the mornings. And I think we could probably actually do a sesshin on one of the images that's brought into this chant, the double li hexagram. I've also got that to hand out. Okay. So the double E hexagram is a pretty interesting thing. It's a really old system in China. And it's been used in a lot of different ways. It's basically, some people will use it as a divination method where you take straws and you drop them, and based on how they fall is how they're arranged. And you can have three different lines, and it's either a straight line or a broken line. Now, I am not an expert on hexagrams, and this is not totally going to be about that, but I think it's interesting how the mirror ties in with this hexagram. It's a mirror reflection of it. Well, let's pass around that one first. Look in it. No, yeah, just. And see what differences you notice or not.
Dashing.
Yeah. So they're different in more than just one way. Even though you're looking in it, you might be the same, but the mirror might be different, or maybe you're different in the mirror.
I must be, what am I supposed to be doing? I'm sorry, looking at myself?
Yeah, so you've got the mirror, kind of look at it, glance, and then pass it to the next person. So it sounds like not much is going on, but there's a large mirror being passed around and then a smaller mirror. There are similar shapes, different colors, different level of cleanliness. Passing around a piece of art that I made quite a few years ago, but if you look at what the person in the picture is holding onto and what's looking back at her in the thing that she's looking at, we've talked a lot about mirrors in the last couple days, and obviously with the title, the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, what I'm trying to demonstrate is that maybe what you're looking into the mirror and what's looking back at you, maybe they're the same thing, maybe they're not. One of the beautiful things about this song is there are so many references available in it. When I first looked at it, I saw it kind of one-dimensionally. And I have another sort of thing to just kind of, right? I look at it, and at first it looked kind of flat. For me, it was a lot of different words. I obviously have an idea of what a horse is, and Chink's Gone Gray, and different things like that. But when I started to actually research it and look into some of the stories, this particular sutra is kind of like a version of the iPhone. It's got all these different links in it to all this knowledge. And it's amazing to me to think that somebody so long ago had the sense to put all of this into one document. And not only that, within the document, it's a mirror within the mirror. If you look at the beginning part of the sutra and the end part of the sutra, it's very, very similar to what this hexagram is doing, only it's done with words and images. And I'm going to go a little bit into these hexagrams, but I'm also going to save time because I want to have enough time at the end to do something that's also related to the mirror. Okay. Cool thing, too, about this particular double E hexagram is it's where phoenix comes out of, or bird, fine bird. And as part of Coben's lineage, the phoenix is very, very special to me and important to me. So this is, I guess, the thing that really stood out to me and got me kind of hooked into doing more of the work. Okay, so the first diagram right here, it's with the two lines on top with the broken line on the bottom. Okay, and this figure is kind of cool. Okay, it's wind. Jun, it's called the gentle. It's also obedient. It's also called the host. And this is kind of cool because this symbol goes into this other symbol. And then we've got this other symbol that kind of is, looks like it's kind of the upside down version of it. Okay, you can see it, right? And they're mirror images of each other, right? You can see that? If we had the mirror to hold up to it, we would see that they would reflect. Like you're looking at water. And I think that's really amazing. The next sort of transition with that thing is where it's kind of like this one comes. Now instead of them reflecting like this with each other, depending on where the water goes, right, they might reflect like this, like they have their backs to each other. You see where this open line is on the top, and on the other one, or at first it's on the bottom and the other one's on the top, you would think normally that they would fit together sort of like this. But realizing that the transition that's happening from this to this isn't just going upside down, it's actually that these lines are falling in different places. And it's kind of neat, because if you see this particular one, this, they call this the resurgence of the real. This is sort of like an achievement thing. Host coming to the light. Prince looking at the minister. Then it switches. So instead of it just being like this, we have to switch a couple of lines. It's like the top line falls all the way two lines down to the middle, and the bottom one falls all the way up to the top. Okay, so now they're looking at each other, kind of. If you look at that soft, receptive part versus that hard, sort of grounded part of sweat, they're lifting, they're centered. And this one is called the seeming uniting with the real, okay? And I have another sort of easier, I think, way to look at this in a second. But then after this shift happens, what happens is it's sort of like they've gone this way to this way, and then what happens is it's like they merge into each other. Whoops, make sure we're doing that right. So you got the double Li that way. And it's really interesting if you think about the way our political situation is right now. You've got people that believe my way is the right way, and then you've got other people who are exactly the same, my way is the other way. And if they turn their backs to each other, well, not a whole lot gets done. And if you have one that kind of turns toward the other to try to communicate with them, well, that might work a little bit. You might learn something. But until both of them come together and merge, you know, not really a whole lot's going to happen, right? So that's why this is such a special, special hexagram. Now, in the individual parts of it, you've got the wind and the lake. And that doesn't mean a lot to us because that's not something that we study. But they call this one the clinging fire. In the I Ching, they actually say it's perseverance furthers it. It brings success. Care of the cow brings great fortune. So if you watch after the things that are important, it's actually in your best interest to persevere and put in the hard work. And it's just amazing to me that hundreds of years ago, the system, there's people wise enough in the world, even though they didn't have iPhones and they didn't have technology and you couldn't know what war was going on the other side of the planet or what horrible thing happened, you know, but yet there was this wisdom within it. It also got me thinking about, there's another diagram in it, but it also got me thinking about the moon. And these diagrams, this is a different way to present that. This is supposedly, let me get back to my right place here. This is the real, comprising the seeming. So this is what it seems like. And you can see that there's a lot more darkness than there is light, right? Kind of like the moon. The second hexagram. The seeming comprising the real. So you can see that they are similar, yet they're different. Kind of opposite in a way. Then they say the resurgence of the real. Okay, that's sort of like when we had the two that were upside down upon each other. Right, and this is actually interesting because in some places this is actually the symbol for the sun in other types of symbology. And then this is the integration of the real and the seeming. Now if you look up at the moon tonight, you're going to see a lot of light. And the moon is kind of telling us the same story that this is, and the same story that this is. Okay? Now, if we think about truth, what's true is always true, truly true. Now, my name is Jen, and I'm a woman. I'm not a priest yet. I've been a baby, I've been a child. There's all these things that were true at a particular time, but are they true right now? No. So what I'm going to suggest is something that's really true. It's going to be true under all sorts of conditions. So I wanted to kind of put that to a test. Okay, if it's true and it's always true, we have pictures that show this. Huh, what would happen if... Whoops, that was kind of fitting. What if we reverse this jewel mirror samadhi? What if we flip it upside down, inside out, backwards and forward? What happens to it? And I think it's interesting because when we think about knowledge or mastery of something, we say we know it inside out. We know it backwards and forwards. You know it like the back of your hand. You know, all of these things are included in this sutra. You know, the finger pointing to the moon. You have it in you. Okay. So what does this sound like? And I'm not going to give you a copy of this because I want you just to listen to it and maybe even close your eyes. And I apologize that it is so upside down, and it's probably good that I'm not actually a priest doing this. Called the host within the host. Just to continue in this way is like a fool, like an idiot. Practice secretly working within. Not serving is no help. Not obeying is not filial. Children obey their parents. Ministers serve their lords. How could it admit to consideration in thought? It is not within reach of feeling or discrimination. When the wooden man begins to sing, the stone woman gets up dancing. What has this to do with the power of skill? But when arrow points meet head on, Yi, with his archer skill, could hit a target at 100 paces. There are house, cat, cow, because there is startlingly different. There are jewel pedestals, fine clothing, because there is the common, like a horse with shanks gone gray, like a battle-scarred tiger. One gazed at a tree for 10 aeons. When about to fulfill the way of Buddhahood, please observe the sages of former times. If you want to conform to the ancient way, the acquiescent mind realizes itself. When an erroneous imagination ceases, they called black as white, according to their delusions, and bestowed upon them the teaching. The ancient sages pitied them, like a tethered colt, a trapped rat, outwardly still while inwardly moving. True eternity still flows. But even though the basis is reached and the approach comprehended, then there are guardian rules. One basic approaches are distinguished, in which teachings and approaches arise. Now there are sudden and gradual. We'll fail to accord with the proper attunement. A hair's breadth deviation in its greatness is utterly beyond location. In its fineness, it fits into spacelessness. Quiescently, it shines bright. with causal conditions, time and season. It is not within the province of delusion or enlightenment. Naturally real yet inconceivable, do not neglect it. Respecting this is fortunate. Embrace the territory and treasure the road. Communing with the source, travel the pathways. Inquiry and response come up together. Suddenly included within the true, like a diamond thunderbolt, it is like the taste of the five-flavored herb. The complete transformation makes five. Piled up, they make three. Relative and ultimate interact. It is like the six lines of the illumination hexagram. Because its speech is not yet correct, ultimately it does not apprehend anything. Is there anything said or not? Baba Wawa. It does not go or come, nor rise nor stand. Like a babe in the world, the five aspects complete. You are not it. In truth, it is you. Form and image behold each other. It is like facing a jewel mirror. It is not without speech, although it is not fabricated. Its use removes all pains. It acts as a guide for beings. It doesn't appear at dawn. It is bright just at midnight. Just to depict it in literary form is to stain it with defilement, for it is like a massive fire. Turning away and touching are both wrong. Miss it and you fall into doubt and vacillation. Move and you are trapped. Yet it responds to the inquiring impulse. The meaning is not in the words. You know where they are when you mix them. Taken as similar, they're not the same. Hiding a heron in the moonlight, filling a silver bowl with snow. So keep it well. Now you have it. The teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. I changed one word in that. I took out the word and in one sentence. Other than that, it's the translation from the Zen Center version of this particular chant. I mean, if you listen to each line, they work backwards and forwards. Sort of by couplets. Yeah, well, not couplets. It's more line by line, really. So I just thought that was really amazing, and when I had that sort of idea, I just went, oh, whoa, what is this thing? It's pretty amazing. You know, when we think about the circle, you know, we think about like points that seem so far apart, but it all kind of folds into each other. What seemed like it was really far apart, they kind of wrap upon each other, you know? There's so much in that little flat little thing, you know? Just got to dig into it. I think I had something else that I wanted to try to do, but I think I've given a lot right now, and I want to see what this is inspired within you, if anything.
What translation were you reading? The one that you passed out? The one you read backwards? Was that the one that passed out or a different translation?
That was a different translation. The one that I read backwards is the Zen Center version. It was just a little bit different than the one that we were reading.
San Francisco Zen?
Yeah. The first one I passed out was by a guy, Dee Brazier. And you have that one. So that one's a lot different. Yeah. But I kind of wanted to throw the curveball, throw in a little bit of information, and then really do like the mirror sort of analogy. So what does that bring up?
Oh, she just did. Huh?
There's two pages.
Inherited the master, the within master, the like that?
No.
No,
I'll... that line first, and then line.
Oh.
Only in each making the others, but not this.
What I have a question. What do you want us to get leave with in terms of the understanding that you're trying to provide here?
Did you see this picture when it came around?
Yeah.
So the Japanese woman looks like she's got a mirror in her hand, right? And what's looking back at her through that mirror? Actually, pass that back.
Oh, I see. It's a. I don't even know what that is. What is it? A water moss or something like that?
No.
A photographer. That's a camera?
Right. So are you the woman holding the mirror, or are you the man trying to take a picture of the woman holding the mirror?
I'm the person holding the picture trying to figure out what you're talking about.
That's a good answer.
I don't mean to be facetious, but I'm totally lost here. So are you suggesting that oftentimes we hear this analogy or metaphor that the universe is in a drop of rain. Is this something common or similar to that in that everything is within itself? That no matter, even though you take multi-diversity, the 10,000 things, that when it's compressed, it gets consolidated in one.
Well, I don't think that they had holograms back when this was written, but right now, I mean, we believe that if there's a hologram, if you take a piece of that hologram has all the information of the rest of the hologram, and they can actually make a hologram from that tiny little piece of the hologram. So with our practice, we're learning to sit down instead of just looking outward. You know, there's this process that's happening within us. You know, I would say that the practice of Zen, I think it's the woman holding the mirror. You know, what's looking back at her is us trying to figure out what Zen is.
I'm gonna really have to work on
that. It's okay. There's a line in some of the supplemental material that we got with that packet where he talks about, you know, what happens when two clear mirrors look at each other or look into each other. You know, I mean, I don't know if you ever did that when you were a little kid, how you have a mirror and then you look at the mirror and it's like you're looking into infinity. Anybody do that? Yeah, I think that there's...
San Francisco, they used to have a mirror, a house where you walk in and it had multiple mirrors so you could see yourself looking in the mirror infinitely. Is that what you're referring to?
I think a little bit of it is. It's a piece of it for sure. You know, the mirror sort of reflecting upon the mirrors. And, you know, at times maybe when we have a lot of emotion or we're angry or we're upset about something, our mirror isn't as clean as when we are right after we sit, or right after we take a week in Sashin, you know, and kind of let the stuff that's gonna come up. You know, it's, you know, we wash our bowls, right? By sitting Zazen, we wash what's going on up here.
Just had a question about one section because it was something that kind of stood out to me as a possibility. Mm-hmm. And I would like to listen to your interpretation of that. Ah, there you go. What do you think the section on where it says, one gazed at the tree, for 10 eons, like a battle-scarred tiger, like a horse with shanks gone gray. That section right there. What is your interpretation of that part?
I think when we sit in nature by ourselves and there aren't other people around, I think that's when we can kind of sink in a way that we can't sink into when we're running around, having to pay our rent, having to feed our families, having to do whatever the responsibilities are. And the animals, like a battle-scarred tiger, like when I picture a tiger that's old and, you know, beat up, maybe the tiger is tired. You know, it's tired of fighting battles. You know, if it's smart, it's obviously survived however many battles it's gone through. In 10 eons, I think it's kind of like how we refer to kalpas. It takes a long time where we have this opportunity where whatever shift is trying to happen, if it's the dark into the light or into the really light, you know, it's an opportunity that doesn't come around every day. It's not an everyday thing.
What do you think the tree is? The tree. The image of the tree. I was just, that part too. Tiger, tree, horse. Actually, tree, tiger, horse.
Tree. Yeah, I mean, it could refer on one level to the Bodhi tree that the Buddha sat underneath. Right? And another, it could be the tree of life.
That would fit. The tree of life. Yeah. Did they have the tree of life back then?
I'm assuming the tree is probably one of the most basic symbols of earth and heaven that there is. And the trunk maybe is our practice.
Was that a I Ching image too? I was just thinking that since this was all part of that, I was wondering if there was that in there. In the I Ching, the tree, there's a symbol for a tree as well. Because, you know, they don't ever put one word in without reason.
Yeah.
They always have some reason for it. I was just, in your research, did you find any tree reference? So you did.
There's lots of tree references, just okay. Within, I wouldn't say necessarily within this part of the Li hexagram, because this is mainly water and wind and fire.
So they had the three of the four
elements.
Yeah,
they're more elemental versus like tree, I think of as a little bit more.
So maybe that's the fourth?
I don't think of a tree as a necessary, I mean, wood maybe would be the element associated with tree.
Isn't there five though?
There's eight sort of basic hexagrams that there could be.
No, I was thinking elements.
Yeah, water,
so I'm wondering,
earth.
Water, earth, air.
Wind.
And
ether.
Water, what? Fire. And then the last one is, they always throw in one more, just
ether.
For a little extra.
Ether.
Ether. So, just because this is way back, and it's more of a Taoist feel to it, that's all. I was just wondering if they had references to all of
that. Yeah, I mean, I think that a sesshin could be done just on the hexagram. If you really wanted to go into it with some depth, you could do 8 days and still not even brush the surface.
Right. I do have another question, unless somebody else has more. The term quiescent, I think I saw it somewhere in here. Come on, quiescence. Sorry? Yeah. On first page, second page.
That's not the same meaning as quiescence.
Because I was reading something where quiescence has an interesting word. I mean, when you think about it, why didn't they just use, like, stillness or or quietness. But why that word quiescence? It's such an old English term. What does quiescence?
I think that's one of the reasons why I liked this other version of the translation, because it says about how using fancy words, rupa images, regard one another. You know, like using fancy words as a way to kind of escape. Mm. I mean, it's a beautiful word.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Can we have the mic?
I love the word quiescent because it's process. So it's nothing, it's not something that's still and calm. It's something changing, maybe from disturbed or distressed, changing into quietness.
And that does kind of fit with the symbology of the double E hexagram. It's vibrant, it's fire upon fire, it's radiance, it's movement.
The thing about quiescence as opposed to stillness
that's a little different as opposed to stillness is quiescence isn't passivity. And I'm wondering if that's what they were emphasizing, is your stillness does not imply being passive. It is a stillness that is non-existence, non-noth, whatever. But it is non-passive stillness. Quiescence is that. Maybe that.
Do you think they were talking about that? I mean, because there's the term of our practice of being stillness and activity. So it's talking about what we go about with that activity. That I am done. Yeah.
You'll not see it in what people say. You'll see it in their spontaneous responses and reactions.
Recently, bright is also like the sun. Like the sun at noon, it is still. And yet it is radiating, and when you're out working in it, it is quiescently bright, beating down its intense rays. And if it were to stop, because of course it'd take 8 minutes for it to stop, right? Because it's 8 minutes, we're 8 light minutes away from the sun.
Can you look directly at the sun?
You can with some help, maybe some protection. But I like you bringing up that quiescent is a word of motion, and that kind of radiation. Maybe that's a great way to describe it, as a quiescent type radiation. But it also works with as eternity flows. And the sun sure just keeps going, and there's no stopping.
Are we talking about acquiescent mind? Where's the word quiescent?
I thought it was quiescently it shines bright. Maybe
well,
I'm.
Where's that? Because I see acquiescent, but I don't see. Where are we? What word are we?
Not in this. It's not in this one. And it's.
Translation.
It's in a different translation. In the one we chant in the morning.
Calls and conditions, time, season, quiescently it shines.
As an electrical engineer, quiescent actually is, I mean, it's not archaic. It's a common term used. There's actually quite a few words here that are used in electrical engineering, especially when you talk about light and transformation of light and things like that. So, but anyway, I was just a little confused about quiescent and acquiescent.
I do have another question, probably because I don't know. What in the world is a diamond thunderbolt? I mean, there's diamond and there's thunderbolt, and then all I can think of is light coming down as being clear like diamonds. What is a diamond thunderbolt? I mean, it's right here. It says, compiled they make three, which you explained very well how that works. The complete transformation makes five. It is all the taste of the five flavored herb. It is like the diamond thunderbolt. All I can think of is Shazam, you know, Flash, Marvel Comics.
I think that's right. I think the diamond thunderbolt would be a thunder. I think it's a metaphor, or maybe it's not a metaphor, for a thunderbolt that would function like a diamond cutter to be able to penetrate. Oh, I'm sorry, that would be able to, a thunderbolt that would be able to function like a diamond in its ability to cut through and to penetrate things. In that sense, there is a Shazam aspect to it. I think it's like, it's just an, it just intensifies the idea of a thunderbolt as a force of, I could say, illumination.
It's a Tibetan reference, isn't it?
It says Mahayana. Well, my teacher taught me that any references towards a diamond are cutting through delusion.
Yeah.
Diamond Sword of Indra, or the Diamond Sutra. That's all.
I had a thought also about the diamond. If you've ever shopped for an engagement ring, it reflects light in an infinity of directions, both the front of the facets and the back of the facets. And a diamond thunderbolt evokes for me almost like one of those reflecting balls in junior high dances or something, where it still faithfully reproduces the image, but in a million ways.
One real quick, I'm reading a book right now called The Immortal Diamond, and it's referring to the true self.
I was up in the middle of the night last night, and it struck me like a diamond thunderbolt as I was looking at the title of this poem, The Jewel Mirror. The Jewel Mirror, many facets, countless myriad facets. Yes, just not a plain surface. Now I don't have to talk tomorrow. There we go.
You're not getting out of it that easily. Not going to get out of it that easily.
So what we're hearing is myriad metaphors. That's the essence of this poem. You know, when someone says a diamond is like a mirror, and someone said a diamond is like the self, or delusions, or something, there, it's myriad symbolisms wrapped around each other.
This is a brilliant document. There are so many stories, famous stories from before this guy was alive, that he packed into this poem. I mean, it would be cool if somebody went through and put little blue links and had it go all across the web just to count how many different references there are. I mean, you saw that packet that the person did on the commentary of it. I don't think I have it here, but it was like that thick, you know? That's a lot of information in two sheets of a sutra.
Yeah, it links to a lot of the cases in the Book of Serenity and the Gateless Gate and Lucliffe Records. So there are a lot of references to all those stories. And it's wonderful, and the transmission of the light, too. So I think that PDF was on the website, wasn't it? Of the,
yes.
And it's compiled. It's interesting that the author isn't shown. Mike knows the guy who put it together, but it's really a scholarly thing that does a lot of these links, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Of the Chinese word to the Japanese translation to, and Japanese kanji characters that are simplified to 15
symbols.
Or 20 different translators. So please enjoy that.
Is that the Stanford one?
No. I think it came out of Zen Center or some affiliate.
Well, because there's like 150-page.
Oh, maybe they are related.
The cover, it looks like this.
Yeah.
That's it? Okay.
Yes, that's on the website. If you go to the main page for...
If you go to the main page for this session... in addition to, at the bottom, it has the text of Jewel Mirror Samadhi from the chant book. It has a link somewhere to that big, thick document that was just being discussed. So, yeah. It's a PDF. It's a nice document.
And what is it called on the...
I don't know what it's called. It might just say you can download a study of the thing here. But you can't really miss it.
You could Google Jewel Mirror Samadhi Translation Study and it would come up.
I can pass the front page around.
Yeah, thank you, Boss.
Quickly, can you touch on how the phoenix is represented in the exhibit?
Yeah, so they say that this... that page because it looks like bird in the actual Chinese character. Oh, I don't have it with me right now, but I checked on my little symbol on the back and it's there.
Jen, I was going to ask you, do you think in some ways, you know, because this is a chant from a chant book, and so many of the chants in the chant book are written in Sino-Japanese, yet they have tremendous power and meaning, not so much because you could read meaning into it by being, you know, by kind of chasing where a particular kanji character came from. But rather, there's just the communal effort of a sangha in voicing kind of a vow and faith. And so, I mean, in addition to there being tremendous volumes of meaning, I was wondering if you thought maybe this is something like that.
I'm not quite sure of your question.
Oh, in other words, it's not really, the value of it is not in trying to understand it, as is so often said in Zen. It's not in the words, even says it in here. But rather, just in the fact of us chanting it and getting into a rhythm, and so thereby using our voices. If you see what I mean, it could be anything like the Sino-Japanese chants. Why do we chant those? We have no meaning associated with them, but they have great power. I was wondering if perhaps this is the English version of the Sino-Japanese.
I'm not sure if it was originally Sino-Japanese or if it's actually from Chinese characters.
Well, or whatever.
You know, but their language is different than ours, where, you know, it's sort of like a picture that has all these different meanings, versus in English, it's sort of like, oh, it's this word or it's that word or it's that word. You know, it's not like you've got like this picture in front of you. And you know, I have never studied Chinese or Japanese, but it is kind of interesting to look at the character that goes along with how they translated it, because it kind of, you know, how they say a picture says 1,000 words, you know. My intent isn't to pin this down into anything, yes, this is the way, or no, this isn't the way. It's to say, wow, hey, look at this. What do you think? You know, and I could be wrong. But I do think it's really cool how if you read the chant backwards, it's not like country music where you get your dog back, you get your truck back, you know, all those things. It actually is true either direction. That made my head blow off on the third day, you know? Wow, this works.
Yeah, I think what Mark might have been trying, he knows this stuff, but I think what Mark might have been trying to get at is that we're chanting the Sino-Japanese chants, like the Makahanya or something like that, and the purpose or the effect of it is that in the meaning, but the fact that we're doing it. And the syllables just function as a medium for that being together in that chant. In that sense, we don't really know what it means. So this, I think what Mark might have been trying to get at, or what I would try to get to, is that this is also kind of incomprehensible in some sense, and it corresponds to simply a vocal medium for producing that group chant effect. Is that kind of what you were getting at? The other thing, it occurred to me when you were doing it backwards and so forth, it reminded me of a technique that the American author William Burroughs came up with, which is called the cut-up technique, where he would just take a article from a newspaper and, you know, slice it down the middle and slice another column down the middle and bring them together. And the new juxtaposition of words would, so it was claimed, produce some kind of meaning that might reveal something that was hidden within each separate text that when brought together. So it was a kaleidoscopic kind of a approach to language. So what you're doing here is kind of, you know, cutting them up and kaleidoscoping them a little bit.
I just reversed it.
Yeah, you just
reversed. It's a mirror image.
So you actually read it backwards, straight up from the bottom.
Well, not, I did it more like line by line.
In groups of, right. It's interesting to that it hardly makes any difference. It's just kind of, every so often there was something which struck as, that doesn't quite make sense, but I think it was more because I'm familiar with how it runs forward. So I was responding to my knowledge of the disjunction rather than anything inherent in what you were doing.
I don't know, Jen, how this necessarily relates to the mirror imagery that you're referring to, but I can see that each one of these stanzas, these lines, stands independent and on its own. There's no need for a conjunctive to carry you over into the second line or third line. So you can each actually read each one of these lines. Because they're complete in themselves, you could actually read the fourth line, then read this tenth line, and then read the 14th line, and it would still have some continuity to it. So, because the reference is to something that can't be sought, or it can be Buddha nature, basic ordinary mind, Buddha nature. It's the implied pronoun. It's the implied I in all of this, but it's omitted because it's not tangible. So, but it's referred to in each one of these lines. It is what's referred to in each one of these lines. So all these lines are is just, for me anyways, expressing the multiplicity of Buddha nature, but yet showing that it in itself is just arrived at. It can be arrived at any multitude of different ways. Like the mirror can reflect it in any many different ways, I guess you could say. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. But I don't think that you could necessarily take line 2 and put it next to line 14 and it would make the same amount of sense.
You can. These are just lines of maybe you'd say characteristics of a little girl. She's beautiful, she's kind, she's sweet, she has blue eyes. And so it doesn't make any difference what order you put those adjectives in, because they're all referring to the little girl. The little girl being Buddha nature. And so these lines can be rearranged any way you want. That's what I'm saying.
It's not about the words.
Well, it's not. Well, okay. It's not. Well, that's what we. Okay. It's. I don't want to go there. I'm trying to keep my feet on the ground here.
Pretty soon.
Okay. I'll make it quick. Just echoing kind of the last few things Nico was saying and Mark, And then Randy, is it?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, I feel like that was really profound too, because what I was thinking was, you were talking about, because I hear this thing about not meaning, meaning in the sense of meaning something like A plus B equals C. There's that kind of meaning, but then this other kind of meaning that's sort of implicit just in the resonant experience of it as a practice or a chant or whatever. And then this meaning like A plus B equals C, and trying to map out the equation, which I think is important for me. Like, I get a lot out of studying these things, and I love that you brought the I Ching and the different references. I mean, to me also the Diamond Thunderbolt for me reminds me of like Vajrayana, and I just feel like there's all these cross currents. But what I got too from what Randy was saying is there's this other type of meaning too that is like, it's meaning beyond meaning. Like, and that's why I think a lot of these things are invitations. It's like I'm trying to comprehend the incomprehensible, or it's like expressing the inexpressible. And so I move into like intimacy with it in this way of it's drawing me beyond itself into something, you know. I mean, I think something like that. I feel like I had other thoughts, but I'm just like going blank now, but something along those lines. Oh, just about why I really like this line, eternity flowing. I feel like there's paradox, these paradoxes that force that point, that there's something paradoxical that my mind can't get, but I lean into it anyways, because it's somehow beyond what my mind can make sense of. But yeah. And it's beautiful imagery, so thank you.
It's almost 4:25. Any short little last ones before we close?
Just an observation.
I just had one, after listening to everybody, observation was, the five ranks were based upon yarrow sticks were thrown, hexagrams, that hexagrams tell stories, and the relations of the hexagrams with each other tell different stories, and how strong they are in relationship to each other. The jewel mirror samadhi was based upon those hexagrams, just as what you said. So this is exactly right. Each of the people here have a different story that is evocative by the jewel mirror samadhi. Look at the list line it says here. Practice secretly, working within, like a fool, like an idiot. Right there. It isn't about the words. Exactly. It's how the stories are created with these words. It's how it makes you feel and what is relevant to you. It's like poetry. It isn't exactly the words, it's the way in which they create a moment. So you pick these and you look at them, and then the story that it's created leads you somewhere, just like what she said. So be a fool. Be a fool and don't say it has to be this one way. It can be any way you want.
Zen mind, beginner's mind.
You got that. And kill your mind, what is it? Die every moment so everything's new. Yes.
Yes. There's only two lines in here that correspond to the hexagrams. The rest of it is other references to other material. It's infinite. Yeah.
So we have an infinite set right here, right in this one thing that you could just build everything you want on. And it's really most fascinating. Really. You could spend a long time looking at it. Or you could be like a fool. and be Zen mind and work the other way. That was my observation. Last line.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jikoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.